This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
So whose moment is it in comedy today?
It's anybody's game.
It really belongs to people like Ali Wong.
Two people, Robin Thede and Tiffany Haddish.
Obviously, there's Hannah Gadsby.
Two dope queens. I love them.
I still think it's white men.
Anybody can step up and say, I'd like the mic now, please, and have an audience.
Whoever takes the mic. That's the question we're exploring this week in our series, Laughing in Color. Yesterday, we heard from Margaret Cho, who headlined the first network sitcom featuring an Asian American cast back in 1992. And her show, All American Girl, ran for just one season on ABC. After that, it took the network's two more long decades to break another comedy barrier. In 2014, stand-up comedian Cristela Alonso became the first Latina to create, write, and star in a network sitcom, self-titled Cristela, which also ran on ABC.
She invited us to her granddaughter's quinceañera this weekend. She waited till the last minute so I would have no time to prepare.
Prepare? It's not your quinceañera. I mean, you became a woman hundreds of years ago.
But just like with All American Girl, the network failed to develop an audience for Cristela, and the show was canceled after a single season. And while Cristela didn't become a major network star, since then she's continued to gain a following through her stand-up. In 2017, her special Lower Classy premiered on Netflix.
I've been traveling nonstop for over a year, and I've seen all of the country, and wow. I was recently in North Carolina, and I went into this bar, and I asked the bartender for an old-fashioned. So he took away my voting rights. I was like, whoa, that's... Whoa. I'm kidding, I'm Latina, I don't vote. We don't vote.
Comedy has been a part of Cristela's identity since she was little. Growing up in a Spanish-speaking household in Texas, she learned English by watching television.
I loved sitcoms growing up, and I realized that I used to talk in the cadence of sitcoms. So a lot of my comedy, the thinking as a child would come from sitcoms. Also, because I was learning the language, I learned to do voices by imitating people. So like I can do this kind of voice. And it was just like, you know, certain little things where I would hear people and I would start doing it because that's how they were speaking English.
But even as Cristela fell in love with comedy, it still took a long time for her to consider comedy as a career.
From my background, below the poverty line, blue-collar family, working check to check, our jobs had to hurt. So for me, the idea that there was any job that was intellectual, that involved thinking, was so luxurious.
I sat down with Cristela to discuss how she established herself in the comedy scene and what lessons she's learned from her experience telling stories about a Latina family for a national audience.
I've been saying this for years. Everybody calls it the Latino community, and there is no country called Latinolandia. And the problem is, with a lot of representation, with a lot of projects, I see that a lot of the Latino community can't support certain projects that are Latino-based because it doesn't reflect their lives. So, you know, with my show, there were people that were saying, oh, well, my family's not like that. That's a stereotype of this. I'm like, this is my family. Like, it literally, you don't understand. My show is based on my family. My family's still alive. I have to answer to them if I was going to do something that exploited or showed them in a negative light or in an unrealistic light.
And white families in sitcoms on television have been able to be many, 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 many different things.
Absolutely. Right? And also when it comes to television, I think we can tell certain stories, but not all of them. You know, Latino stories have to be multi-generational. It's the grandmother, the mom, and that's how it's described, multi-generational, where we see a generation of the Garcia family. It's the grandmother, the mom, and the daughter, and blah, 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 you know. Okay, so it's a family. Now, why do we have to say multi-generational? And to me, I've always figured that it's because we almost assume that we're going to, our job is to teach. We have to educate. We can't have fun. We need to inform people. We have to tell them about our history. You know, we can't have an episode where someone wants to just go bowl. If we have that episode, there should be a monologue where I say, My mother came to this country so that I could bowl.
Do you feel that there are limitations like that in your comedy, when you do stand-up comedy? Do you have more freedom on the stage?
Oh, more freedom. I mean, that's why I wrote the book. The reason I wrote my book is because I felt so stifled by network and studio trying to narrate my story into what their perception was, that I realized that comedy's where I'm free. This is actually an argument I had with the network, with the powers that be during my show. Now, I had problems with some of the writers on my show, with the network, with studio people, because, you know, they couldn't understand that my life was my life. There was a point in the year that my show was on where I had to explain to them, I want to remind you guys why I got this, why you said I got this show. You saw my stand-up. I had no dreams of getting a TV show. I was happy doing stand-up. People don't understand, when you do stand-up, you do the job that a network and studio can never do. You go do that research that they will never get, because you're going out and playing with an audience that isn't necessarily what is your quote-unquote demo, and you have to make them laugh. And I wasn't doing a Latino tour where I'm just hitting up, like, you know, like the tamale stands and everything. You know what I mean? Like, I was hitting everybody because I was doing a college tour where I was doing shows in Nebraska and Iowa and Michigan, Wisconsin. And I had to make everybody laugh. So, you know, for me, I found it so defeated during the show where I thought, oh, you said you wanted my stand-up, but then you don't want my stand-up. Like, you don't want that. Like, you're limiting what I can say and how I can say it. You know, if I tell you something that's true to me, you know, it's like there was this idea about, to me, food allergies are a luxury. And people, you know, they couldn't understand what I meant. And I was like, yeah, I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm not saying they're not real. I'm saying that when you're poor, you don't really have the luxury of learning that you're allergic to certain food, because you just eat when you can eat.
And you eat what's put on the table.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and if you don't, if you don't like it, you just don't eat. So it's that thing, how do I explain that to people, that this is funny to me because it's a different idea than most people know? You know, so right there, it's like, if they're telling me they don't get it, trust me on this. Like, this is, I have a whole thing about this. And they're like, no.
I mean, even now we see there are some lines being drawn, even in comedy, even mm-hmm. There's a lot of male comedians complaining about how, quote unquote, PC culture uh-huh. or woke culture uh-huh. Limits the jokes that they can make. And these aren't just white guys. I uh-huh. mean, there have been a couple, you know,
yeah.
without naming names. First of all, what's your take on that, the whole woke culture is taking over? And do you feel like there are certain lines when you're on stage that you cannot cross, you know,
right.
that are just like off limit?
I don't have a problem with the PC culture, woke culture calling me out. I think that our language evolves with time and we should be able to learn. I don't think I'm perfect. And I think that if I were to say something that was offensive, I would like to know, because if someone finds it offensive, it has to be for a reason. There are certain sitcoms from the 70s and 80s that if you see them now, you're like, whoa, like you could never get away with it. That doesn't mean that at that time it wasn't funny, you know? And it's that thing where you know better. But we got here because that moment existed. Now, I will say, to me, I think that stand-up, I think that comedy in its truest art form is you being yourself and conveying your ideas. I think that the best chance you have of being successful in comedy is really being your most honest version of yourself. If you can really be honest about how you feel about certain things, you shouldn't be apologetic about everything, because that's the true sense of who you are. I do believe, though, that there's certain ways to express ideas that I always wonder, is that the best way to convey it? Is there a sharper way of conveying it? It doesn't even mean about like being offended or being crude. Is that the best word that you can use there? Is that the funniest word? Like, have you ever tried using a different word that might be funnier? You know, and that's just writing. Like in stand-up, you'll know. The example is, if you're going to do a joke about a bird, the word parakeet is funnier than bird. So maybe try parakeet instead of bird. You know, it's trial and error in stand-up.
I want to talk about women, particularly black and brown women in comedy, mm-hmm. and money, because we know that that matters, right?
Yeah.
In 2017, you released a Netflix special, Lower Classy.
Yes.
The next year after that, Monique was criticizing Netflix, right, for giving her or offering her what she said was $500,000 to do a special. And she said, you know, Amy Schumer, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, they all made millions. How did you feel about your Netflix deal? You don't have to critique Monique here, but how did you feel about your Netflix deal? Do you feel like you're getting paid what you deserve to
I thought I was getting paid. Well, here's the thing. Here's the catch. I have low self-esteem. So I always say that I have low self-esteem because it has half the calories of regular self-esteem. Now, having said that, I'm very hard on myself. I was very happy about what I got with my Netflix deal because I also know where I stand, meaning that when you're one of the first or only to be doing it, it is hard to get valued at what you deserve because there's no one before you. To say, well, this person got this, then this person, you know, was it maybe 2010, I think, I got booked at a comedy club and I had to do Wednesday night through Sunday. I got a deal to do all those shows for $800. The regular rate is about $1,500 for someone on that level. You know, I didn't have a lot of credits. And, you know, my friend had just done that club. And I asked him what he got, and that's when I found out it was $1,500. So my agent at the time, and this is when I'm trying to break into clubs, I complain because it's almost half of my friend. And he says, you know, the owner of the club doesn't think women are funny. So he thinks you have to go and improve yourself. At this point, I hadn't been doing colleges, and I was really trying to get my feet wet, and I needed to pay rent. And it was like this thing where I'm like, I had to take it because I didn't have any other choice. I did the week. It was awful. And I didn't headline that club again. That person ended up owning another comedy club. I want to say maybe like 5 years later, I play his other club and I sell all the shows out and I get a bonus for every time I sell out the show. And he wrote the check out to me and it was gigantic. It was like a big amount for me at that time. But I told him, I'm like, I waited long to come back because I wanted to show you what I was worth. And this is what I was worth all along. And at that point, that was the last time I ever played that club. And I never did it again. And it was that thing where you gotta show people what you're worth at times. And it's frustrating because not everybody has to do that.
To wrap here, I want to ask you one question that we want to talk to all of our comedians about here. Whose moment is this era of comedy that we're in right now?
Oof. I'm going to say I still think it's white men. As a Latina, I will tell you, I think that a lot of the stories that I think we get to tell can be at times agenda porn, where we tell the same narrative because that's what they think is funny. And we are not allowed to really explore a lot of facets of our life. So I think that it's really great that we're getting opportunities, but I feel like we're playing catch up because we're a minority and we're a minority that's very hard to get the numbers for it in a way that they understand. You know, my brother became a naturalized citizen in 2016 and it took him over 30 years. That's the process, you know? And we don't see that on TV. We see a lot of, a lot of immigration stories, you know, and they're always very serious. That's what my brother always said. You know, he's like, they're always so serious. You know, he's like, it makes it seem like if you're an undocumented immigrant, it's like you live in a cave and you just cry all day wondering, like, is today the day? You know, and he's like, I also like to laugh, you know. I also like to have fun. I love my family. I love, you know, and it's interesting because when I hear him say that, to me, it's like, we don't have a face yet. We don't have that soul yet. They treat us like statistics and they tell our stories like statistics. because that's all they know. Now, they can see the numbers. They can see demos. They can see reports. But until you make an effort to personally go out and meet these people and understand that we all have so much in common, regardless of culture, regardless of economic status, until then, things won't change. And I think that right now, white men are still ruling a lot of the community, a lot of the voice. I think it's their moment right now because they dictate it. And until we can have other people in that power dictate change, it's going to be a long time before we get that change.
Cristela Alonso is a stand-up comedian and actress. Cristela, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks.